Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Passos, an internet radio program conducted by Dr. Damian Goldberg from Los Angeles, California. Damian invites you once a week to share this space to reflect on your work life. How can we achieve results, satisfaction, and well-being at work? How can we find balance between our work and personal life? Prepare for challenging dialogue with Dr. Damian Goldberg and his guests, who are thought leaders from all over the world.
Hi, welcome to Passos. This is Dr. Damian Goldberg from Los Angeles, California. Today is Tuesday, December the 30th. And this is our last show of the year, and we are very lucky to have a coach and expert on relationship. That's the topic we're going to be covering today. For people who are listening to us for first time, Passos, it's a program that focused on well-being at work. Our goal is once a week to reflect on strategies, ideas, models, theories that can help us to have better work environment. And we have people from all over the world sharing their ideas, their knowledge, their strategies. And today we have with us Mark Capellino. Mark is a friend of mine, he's a colleague. We know each other for a couple of years. We went through the same coaching training, the same program many years ago. And he has been an executive coach for more than 18 years. He works with executives and leaders, managers, to develop effectively their relationships at work, between other topics. And today I ask Mark to share with us his ideas from the book he's writing. It's a book in progress, soon to be ready. He has been focusing on the topic of relationships that work at work. So with that, I want to invite Mark and welcome him to the program. Mark, thank you for accepting my invitation to participate today in our program.
It's my pleasure, Damian. Thank you for inviting me.
Great, Mark. And starting with the topic of relationships, it's a topic that I am personally very interested in. And I would like to ask you, how did you come up with the interest in writing, in investigating, in working in this topic, and how did you come up with starting writing your book?
So I think it's a topic that found me, I like to say. But in my work with executives and managers and companies, I'd say over time, the themes started to emerge that, you know, oftentimes we hear executives declare that they don't trust somebody or they're having a difficult time with another individual. And over time, I realized that everybody that I'm working with are very good at what they do, what I call the functionary aspects of their work. You know, most executives, most professionals know their work, what they do very well. The challenge becomes when there's interaction with somebody else that's also very good at what they do, and they're both very good at the functionary, but they encounter what I refer to as a breakdown or a challenge in the relationary field. So I like to think about role relationships similar to we would think about arranged marriages. In other words, I have a role, let's say CEO, you have a role CFO, and because we each inhabit our respective roles, we're effectively in an arranged marriage. And everybody could probably say that they understand the importance of developing a relationship with our coworkers. But I've come to the question, according to what design? In other words, how do we design a relationship?
It's interesting what you say, because many times my experience as a coach working with my clients is that people bring relational issues as one of their key concerns, relationship with their bosses, relationship with their colleagues, relationship with their direct report, and many times these interactions are not what people are expecting, or they don't feel satisfied by them, or they feel upset. And as you are saying, many times people do not have the tools to be able to manage them effectively. I really like this metaphor of an arranged marriage because it's in some way, and many times you don't choose your boss or you don't choose your direct report. Many times you can do that, but there are times where you are new in a job, in a company, or you get a new job and something changes and they are not under your control. And many times people do feel trapped in some way in these relationships.
Sure, and I'd venture a guess, Damien, that most people that bring up the topic of relationship bring it up in the context of a relationship problem. I don't think we actively want to think about our relationships in terms of how do we develop good relationships, but how do we respond to broken relationships or bad relationships. One way I like to talk about this is the whole topic of trust only comes up in an organizational setting when there's been a breach of trust or somebody has declared that they can't or don't or won't trust somebody. Conversations are really the job skills of every person in an organization. Our work is actually done in conversation with other people. I have, for example, a client says to me, I want to learn how to have difficult conversations. And I say, well, what is it about the conversations that you're having that are going well, and what is it about the conversations that you're not having, and why are you avoiding having them? Well, because they're difficult. And so I'm really saying they're difficult because we haven't established up front in our one-on-one working relationship, what will we do? And this gets to the relationship design. What will we do when you, an intelligent, committed, thoughtful individual, and I, an intelligent, committed, and thoughtful individual, encounter a difference of opinion or a difference of priority because of our different job responsibilities or a different way to solve a problem? Are we going to encounter that as a problem or an opportunity? So if we operate as conflict is something that we can utilize instead of something that is a problem, and we declare that ahead of time, ahead of any potential conflict, and we hold each other with the benefit of the doubt, which is one of the constructs, right, in the model that I'm working on. Can we give each other the benefit of the doubt relative to intentions and competency, so that if we do encounter a problem, we're not going to automatically operate as if somebody has malicious intent or they're necessarily incompetent?
That's very important because that way of thinking or that paradigm or that way of looking at reality give us access to different conversations. We are thinking that somebody has bad intentions or somebody or our belief that we have about our judgment about people can be in our way to have these relationships. You were distinguishing before, in terms of relationships, two cases. One is about broken relationship when there is a problem, when there is a conflict, but also you talk about a step before that, that is about designing these relationships so when these challenges come up, people are very prepared. So what would you say, Mark, that are key elements of designing, and I'm venture to say any relationship, because when we're talking about designing relationship at work, that can also apply to any relationship in our lives. My experience also is many times people who come to coaching with challenges in relationships at work, they also have similar challenges at home and or with other friends or in other areas of their lives. So what do you think are the key elements in designing a relationship?
So thanks for making the connection, Damien, between personal and professional relationships. So I've long before I came to this work, I've read my share of self-help books or relationship books about personal relationships, and I can remember one indicating that expectations will kill any relationship. It's the death, the root cause of problems in relationships. And in answer to your question, I would say that expectations that we have of one another that we haven't articulated to one another is really the root of the problem. So, one of the design constructs for relationship is that we both broadly and specifically express what we expect from one another. In other words, I have a job responsibility or you're my best friend. either way. We both have job roles, or in the personal setting, we have friendship. All of our relationships carry with them expectations in both directions. We have things that we expect of other people and things that other people expect of us. Mm-hmm. We usually don't identify those many times even to ourselves until our expectations have not been met. So I love asking this question to a room full of people when I do talks. How many of you have an expectation of another person and only identify that that expectation has not been met, and then to further realize that the reason why it hasn't been met is because you didn't speak to it ahead of time? And I get a lot of nervous laughter because people realize, yeah, I have expectations of people because they have these jobs and they have these roles, but we haven't necessarily been specific or articulate about just exactly what is the expectation. Maybe it's the timeline element of the expectation. So being really transparent with one another that, look, expectations are legitimate. Really one way to define expectations is that we have some anticipation about what's going to happen. Because of you and your role, because of the role responsibility that we have to one another, we have an anticipation or an expectation that something is going to happen. A report is going to be delivered, information is going to be shared, whatever the execution might be. Same thing about personal relationships. I'm sure we could come up with many examples if we had the time. So that's one construct.
I think what you're saying is interesting, because when I do similar work that you do, and when I train managers in supervisory skills, in coaching skills, I always, when we talk about the issue of trust, so that will be inside the distinction of trust and building trust, the number one element to build that trust is clarifying expectations. And I also like to tell people that the other person doesn't have a crystal ball. People don't read our minds. And I like to keep telling that to people during the program. People don't read your minds. We need to communicate. We need to clarify. And I also think that that is a great source of conflict between people in general, because people have that idea that the others are going to be reading their minds and they know what they want, what they need, and that most of the time not the case.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting because that becomes particularly difficult, and I'm sure your listeners and you and I would agree, when the person we're expressing our expectations to is our boss or our customer. So the hierarchical environment sometimes is prohibitive, or it prohibits, because we don't think about it ahead of time, our ability to be transparent with our boss. You know, I coach my clients to identify what their boss, could even be the board if it's a CEO, expects of them. That's an easy conversation. The difficult conversation is when we turn the tables and say, well, what about what you expect of your boss? Mm-hmm. And they, well, I can't tell my boss what I expect of them. Well, why not? Do you have some legitimate expectations that your boss needs to be aware of that will facilitate you doing a better job? Well, yeah, but I can't tell them that. I can't ask them that. I can't express that. Same thing with a customer. We have a consulting customer. We're going to sit down and have an introductory meeting with a brand new customer, and we're going to give them an opportunity to express what their expectations of us are, and we're going to articulate those expectations back to them to make sure that we've heard it correctly. How often do we say, now, in order for us to fulfill our promises to you, our commitments to you, our contractual obligations to you, here's what we're going to expect from you?
I agree with you. I think to the extent that we also take risks in doing that. But I remember a few years ago having a job and having to talk to my boss and clarifying expectations, my expectations too, saying this is what I need to be effective in working with you. I asked her, what do you need from me? And then I said, oh, this is what I need from you. And I remember that one of the things was to give me authentic feedback, that I was not afraid that anything that she felt that was working well or was not working well, I wanted to know. Of course, you know, like that helped her to do her job better, but also helped me to be sure that I was aligned to what the expectations were, talking about expectations. Now, other than expectations and clarifying expectations to the extent that we are able to do that, what would be other distinction or other strategy to keep present when we are designing relationships?
So I think even before we get to expectations, being clear on what our roles are, broadly as defined by our job responsibilities, or could be specifically to an emerging situation, could be a project, a problem in the field. So as things happen, are we clear on what our roles are? And oftentimes this seems rather obvious when I bring this up to groups and individuals, and then when we peel back the layers, we realize, well, you know, the person that has the title marketing manager, I relate to this person similarly to how I related to the marketing manager in the last organization I worked for, only to find out that in doing so, I took some things for granted. There's some nuances, and that's where most problems emerge from anyway, is nuances of understanding, to role clarity. So I think the expression of roles between two people and the clarification of expectations between two people make up the broader definition of what I refer to as alignment. And the reason why I take pains to group roles and expectations together under the title of alignment is because one of the things that we can declare between each other in designing our relationship is that alignment has a half-life. So you and I are going to have a conversation. It doesn't have to be elaborate to clarify our roles, again, broadly according to our job responsibilities or specifically according to things that happen in the field, if you will. We're going to express our expectations in one another. The minute we leave this conversation, having aligned ourselves around these two things of roles and expectations, we're operating in dynamic circumstances. Priorities are going to change. Things are going to happen. We're going to learn some things. So if we declare that either one of us can convene a conversation at any time to recalibrate, to get realigned, and it does, again, does not have to be elaborate, we can continue to stay in what I call a sustainable relationship. There are two other constructs. I'll just mention them briefly, and then maybe we can dive in a little further where you feel it would be beneficial. One of them is declared beliefs, and I mentioned this earlier, that we can give each other the benefit of the doubt relative to good intentions, competence, you know, that we don't have any hidden agendas. And sometimes people have taken issue with that particular construct, and they say, well, what if I can't give somebody the benefit of the doubt relative to their competence or their good intentions? And I said, well, regardless of how what the situation is, or regardless of how you assess the other person, that's going to be whether or not you are able to talk about it. But if you can consider your relationship with another person and identify that you're questioning their competence in a particular area or their intentions. And intentions could even mean misaligned priorities. It doesn't have to be malicious intent. Mm-hmm. If you can keep top of mind this construct, it gives you the opportunity to continue to nurture or design your relationship. And then the final is commitment to agreements. In other words, we're committed to each other's success, which goes to, you know, when we encounter, not if, but when we encounter conflict, we agree to talk with each other, not about each other. And in a, you know, in a team setting, this is really important because we tend to triangulate quite a bit. You know, we talk with person A about person B instead of person B holding us accountable to go back and talk to person A. They jump on the bandwagon and say, oh, yeah, person A, I've got the same problem there. But if we all agree as a team to support one another, to have direct conversations with one another, we can have a really robust team environment as well.
What is, in your experience, Mark, helping people to build that commitment? Because many times some people are not ready, not willing. How would you suggest people to work on making that commitment possible?
So I believe that ready and willing is a function of know-how, of ability. I think we come up through primary school and middle school and high school and university. We really never learn how to do relationship. But we have flowing in the streets concepts like agreeing to disagree or concepts like trust. You know, we readily and actively declare that we don't trust somebody. And when we declare that we don't trust somebody to somebody else treats that as if it's, you know, beyond reproach. You know, there's something about, you know, declaring that you don't trust somebody, you know. So I think being able to have a literally a design construct for relationship is the first piece, the know-how, the skills in language, the distinctions in language to talk about these things. So some of the ideas that we've discussed already in this call. And then in an organizational culture, I really think that this has to emanate from effective leadership. In other words, leaders really need to model this. And then once they have the construct for relationship or the design framework for relationship learned, once they've learned that, they can begin to teach it. And that's where I've had really the most fun and the most success working with organizations is to start with the senior most leader in their one-on-one relationships. And I really believe that everything that we've talked about needs, for the most part, to happen in one-on-one conversations. I've found, Damien, I'm sorry, go ahead with your question.
No, what I was thinking, and I really appreciate all of these ideas, because I think give a clear guidance to look at designing relationships, everything that you cover from alignment in terms of clarifying roles and expectations, declaring our beliefs, giving people the benefit of the doubt, that commitment to success. The question that I have for you, and for many people who are maybe listening to us and maybe wondering, in terms of relationships, takes two to tango. So what happened with one? As we bring all of that, but the other person is not receptive or not willing to look at their beliefs or look at their commitment, or they just decided not to trust us or the relationship, or they are not willing to give us the benefit of the doubt about our intentions. What is your experience in terms of managing these kind of challenges?
Well, so I think that would be the case no matter what. So
sooner or later that will happen.
Well, yeah. Well, I think there will always be somebody who, to some degree, appears resistant or reticent. I think that's so, regardless of whether or not we have a design framework about relationship in front of us. This is maybe my altruistic philosophical center of gravity. I like to know that I can give people the benefit of the doubt, that the reason why they're not willing is because they don't perceive themselves as competent. They don't see the way. There are a lot of relationship, you know, speak or platitudes, I think, that prevent us. You know, I think the consulting world and the publishing world, the publishing world have put a lot of information out there that would have us be afraid, you know, how to have difficult conversations, how to have awkward conversations. So, you know, right from the get-go, we sort of look at interacting with people as difficult and awkward and fearful. The other point I wanted to bring up to your earlier question about how do we bring this, you know, into organizations is, I think it's the responsibility of leaders to take a stand or put a stake in the ground that relationship is our job responsibility, that the relationary aspects of our organizational citizenship are every bit our job responsibility as the functionary. We all know the functionary very well, whether we're an accountant or an engineer or a programmer. We go to school and train very rigorously to learn these job skills. But the relational skills, we sort of, by and large, we muddle our way through. So I think to declare that this is our job responsibility, coming from a position or a belief system of giving people the benefit of the doubt that if they have the information, if they have the distinctions, they can become much more effective, much more competent at actually designing and then developing working relationships at work.
Mike, we need to start wrapping up the call today. I was wondering, in terms of breakdowns, what happened when you find yourself working with leaders and in organizations, are there breakdowns in relationships? Any suggestions or ideas around that? I think what you just said is key in terms of leaders being role models. Any other ideas?
In terms of identifying the breakdowns?
Yeah, and managing them.
Managing them. I think just taking an inventory of all the conversations that one is having in their head. I think we tend to have conversations with other people in our head in the form of ruminating or speculating. And so I ask my clients to identify what are the conversations that you're carrying around with you as a problem, as a breakdown, that you've actually not had. And then in order to address the breakdown, can you identify what you and the other party mutually care about? What do you have in common? What are you ultimately trying to accomplish together? And can we identify this as an opportunity to explore and learn from one another? I've found, this is probably my last point on this, Damien, is the most competent leaders, let's say the most competent CEOs that I've ever worked with, who are remarkable in the functionary and the relationary. You know, people refer to them as charismatic leaders. They're very good at interacting, engaging with people. They don't even know what they're doing well. In other words, they can't necessarily define it for other people so that they could teach it. And so when they leave the organization, move on to another assignment, they leave a void, because while they've done it well, there's also been somewhat of a cult of personality, or, you know, they've been referred to as the charismatic leader, and it's so difficult to define that other people don't necessarily know how to do that well because it hasn't been defined for them.
Interesting. And going back to the point that you were talking about commonalities, I think that's key in team building also, like just being sure that everybody is aligned to that bigger vision and remembering why we are doing what we are doing. We had many times that strategy is really helpful when we are dealing with challenges, conflict, and differences. Just keeping in mind what do we have in common, why we are doing what we are doing. That bigger vision is a really effective strategy. So, Mark, it's time. We need to wrap up the call. Any last thought, anything else you want to say before we finish the call today?
Beyond expressing my gratitude to you, Damien, for the invitation, I do want to reiterate that I honestly believe that every person that comes to work every day to do a job and do it well has the desire and the ability to be more effective in designing and developing working relationships that work. I honestly believe that. And if we can more effectively identify the ways in which we can engage with one another, we have access to so much more than we are currently tapping into. So thank you for the opportunity to speak to this.
Oh, thank you, Mark. I think it's a great way to finish the year with this conversation. My personal belief is that the quality of our life depends on the quality of our relationships. And if you ask people what is the most important for them, most people will tell you that the people that they love, their family, their friends, this is what the most important for them in their lives. And unfortunately, many times, what is the most important that we have, we don't know how to develop, how to make it grow, and how to design it in a way that is healthy and is satisfactory. So I think that the conversation that we had today gives some great ideas for people to look into all of our relationships, particularly at work. But I think that many of the things that you share with us apply to all of our relationships. So if people want to reach you and have questions and want to learn more about this topic and the book that you're writing, can you share with us your email or website so people in that way can be in communication with you?
Sure. My email and my website all in one. It's Mark, M-A-R-K, at Mark Cappellino, C-A-P-P, as in Peter, E-L-L-I-N-O, .com. Mark at markcappellino.com.
Great. In that way, if people are interested, they can also reach you. So one more time, thank you for joining us. And I want to thank also everybody who is listening to us today for being with us the whole year. It has been a great pleasure, this cycle of calls. We are going to have all of them available in the website at goldbarconsulting.com. Also through social media, in the links of the invitation for the shows, you can also access the radio talk shows. So thank you for spending this year with us. I want to wish you happy holidays. And one more time, Mark, thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure, Damien. Feliz Año Nuevo.
Feliz Año Nuevo to you too and to everyone.
Ciao.
This is the end of Pasos, conducted by Dr. Damien Goldberg. Thanks for sharing this program with us today. We hope you find today's conversation challenging and stimulating. You can download this program and share with your colleagues in our website.